The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Welcome to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are a congregation dedicated, like Thomas Paine was, to challenging the mind, nurturing the spirit, and transforming the world. I'm Joanne Walker, an at-large member of the Board of Trustees, and I do apologize for the little change of situation, but I'm still recovering from December's fall, and standing is not a great thing for me. So wherever you are in your life journey, wherever you are on your spiritual journey, whomever you love, whatever your gender identity or expression, we welcome you into our circle of compassion and caring. So I love the way this song that You Raise Me Up. It's a song that I think can be interpreted in so many ways. Here it was showing strength and support between sisters. Sometimes it can be interpreted as supporting another person, and some people interpret it as a hymn, support from God. And I think a song like that is really great, where so many different kinds of people can accept it. When I hear it, I always remember my sister, because she was my support through most of my life. The Soul Matters theme for this month is trust. It is also the end of Women's History Month. So in preparing this service, I have to admit, I've changed my focus multiple times. Should it be a service only about women who were vital to the progress of women in our society? Should it be a service about trust, perhaps trusting yourself? And if it is about trusting oneself, shouldn't it also touch on perseverance and persistence? What about quiet resistance to the so-called societal norms of the time? Does quiet resistance involve courage? Every time I sat down to work on this, I have to say, all these ideas came into my head, so I decided to try to touch on all of them as much as possible. So today, I invite you to join me in examining what I call quiet resistance, which includes the practices of perseverance and persistence in creating change. And while these actions do not apply solely to women, we will examine them by briefly looking at two women of substance who rather quietly resisted the expectations and norms of their time, and in doing so became successful women who are firsts. This morning, Karen McCann will light the chalice for us. Well, you're gonna have to do both because I can't stand up. So Karen's going to light the chalice and read the words of Paul Sprecher.
Good morning. While I read the words of Paul Sprecher, I will also light the chalice. We light this chalice in memory of the courage of those who have struggled with freedom, the persistence of those who have struggled for justice, and the love of those who have built beloved communities to carry on the light of hope. And as I light the peace lamp, please say the words that are on the screen. May peace be with us.
Our gathering song is hymn number 6, Just As Long As I Have Breath.
Just as long as I have breath,
Renee Pidgeon will read an excerpt of a writing by Erica Hewitt.
Bold and courageous together. The word courage comes from the Latin cor, which means heart. According to poet Mark Nepo, the original use of the word courage meant to stand by one's core, a striking concept that reinforces the belief found in almost all traditions that living from the center is what enables us to face whatever life has to offer. To encourage means to hearten, to impart strength and confidence. This is part of our work as a religious community, to encourage one another, to be bold in engaging the world around us, as well as what scares us internally, to give one another the confidence and heart to live as fully as possible. And now we can sing the children's recessional, Go Now in Peace.
Go now in peace, go now in peace. May the spirit of love surround you everywhere, everywhere you may go.
I recently watched a documentary called Resistance, They Fought Back. It was about the many ways that Jews fought back during the Holocaust. Most of these acts of resistance were quiet, so quiet that they have often gone unmentioned. These acts were quiet resistance, and the most common characteristics involved in this type of resistance are the personalities of the people involved, the circumstances in which they lived, and the qualities of courage, persistence, perseverance, resilience, resoluteness, and a bit of quiet infiltration. So today we will look at these qualities and how they exhibited themselves in two women whose names don't usually pop up when you are thinking about pioneers in women's rights. One of them, Lena Richards, is someone whom I learned about on a podcast. And the other, Genevieve Blatt, is someone whom I knew personally. But before we head into their stories, I think it is helpful to look at a few of these traits very briefly to understand how I am using them here. First, courage. Bravery, not letting your fears overwhelm you. And persistence and perseverance. They're very similar. I once heard a quote that perseverance is failing 19 times and succeeding on the 20th. Not sure who said it. Resoluteness, can't get that one out. Solid commitment. And resilience. Most of us think about it as bouncing back. Winston Churchill said, success is stumbling from failure to failure with no loss of enthusiasm. When I think about Lena Richard and Genevieve Blatt, I think of all these things and two others, resourcefulness and patience. I consider them both to be quiet resistors, but don't get me wrong, they didn't go along to get along. Given the times that they were in, I am focusing mostly on their success. So Lena Richard. There isn't much information on Lena Richard. She has been called America's first unknown celebrity chef. She grew up and spent most of her life in the Jim Crow South in New Orleans. She started working at 14 in the early 1900s as a maid in a wealthy white household. One night, she was asked to prepare the family's dinner, and they loved her cooking. The wife encouraged Lena to experiment with her cooking, and she was a natural at it. Eventually, when Lena was in her early 20s, her boss sent her to a renowned cooking school in Boston. So off she went to Boston, a young 20-year-old Black woman. And remember, at the time, Boston was part of the Jim Crow North. At the school, all of the white students had to agree that she could be in the class before she could attend. Everything else she'd had to do separately. But this school gave Lena not only valuable cooking instruction, it gave her credibility. And she had credibility as a trained professional chef, a rare thing for any woman of the time, let alone a woman of color. Lena returned to New Orleans, where she opened a catering business in 1928. She had both the range and reputation to build her business throughout the Depression. And in 1937, she published the first African-American authored Creole cookbook. Then, on her own, she went on a book tour. By herself, in her travels, she went around the most eastern parts of the country, and she cooked for members of many wealthy families, including the visiting Churchills and the Rockefellers. And the Rockefellers were so impressed, they invited her to be head chef at a restaurant they were opening. This woman really worked hard. By the 1940s, Lena Richard was nationally known and went back to New Orleans, where she started a frozen food business, opened a restaurant, and nearly 15 years before Julia Child, starred in her own cooking show on television. Lena was, to say the least, resourceful, persistent, courageous, and intelligent. By 1950, she had built a culinary empire. And in the days of early television, she was a star. Sadly, a little over a year after her TV program premiered, she went home not feeling well, and in November 1950, she died of a heart attack. She was about 50 years old. But in that very short time, Lena Richard did a hell of a lot for a woman whose destiny was supposed to be a household maid. Now, Genevieve Blatt. Genevieve Blatt's story is also a story of a courageous, persistent, resolute, resilient, and intelligent woman. She was born near Pittsburgh in 1913, 20 years before Ruth Bader Ginsburg was born. She attended the University of Pittsburgh and graduated in 1937 with a master's degree and a law degree. She was the first woman to hold statewide office in Pennsylvania, serving as the elected Secretary of Internal Affairs for 12 years from 1954 to 1966. We don't have a Secretary of Internal Affairs anymore. While still serving in this position, she ran against Republican Senator Hugh Scott in 1954, but lost to him in a recount by less than 50,000 votes. After this defeat, she remained active in politics and government, both nationally and at the state level. She was appointed as a judge of the Commonwealth Court in Pennsylvania in 1972, a position that she held until she retired at age 80. One thing that I found particularly interesting was that while still in law school, Judge Blatt was selected as a delegate to the 1936 Democratic Convention, where she cast the first vote for Franklin Roosevelt. She went on to attend every convention through 1972, when she couldn't attend anymore because she was a judge. She worked with Presidents Kennedy and Johnson. As a judge, one of her most memorable rulings was the establishment of the precedent in Pennsylvania that high school sports teams could not discriminate on the basis of gender. That decision still stands today. I first met Judge Blatt in 1979. At the time, I was in college and was spending the summer in Harrisburg on a fellowship with the state government. She was a small woman, known for her flamboyant hats, her soft, deep voice, and her generally humble demeanor, You would barely notice her unless she spoke up. And she spoke up very quietly. But she was also a well-respected jurist and an accomplished politician who was used to being the only woman in the room. I spent 2 summers in Harrisburg as a fellow. Because I had a car and none of the other fellows did, she took a liking to me because she didn't drive. So I became the judge's designated driver, and she had an active, very active social calendar. So she took me to, I drove and she let me into every single event. I sat next to her at dinners and conferences and all these other things. And during those 2 summers, I met governors, senators, members of Congress, other judges, legislators from both parties. I learned more from her in 2 summers than I could in any classroom or job. Genevieve Blatt was respected by politicians on both sides of the aisle. I never heard her raise her voice, and I never heard her say a bad word about anyone, no matter what their politics or their beliefs. Also, I never heard anyone say a bad word about her to this day. She clearly had her own method of moving into and through what was at the time a man's world. And she did so very quietly and deliberately with grace and dignity. It seemed clear to me then, and it still does now, that she was welcomed into that world and was well respected in it. So I learned a lot from Judge Blatt. She taught me many things about how to be a woman in a male-dominated profession. She said, "Joanne, it was the little things that often make the difference." One of the first things she taught me was an appropriate and assertive handshake. I can still remember her saying, "Don't be afraid to give a firm handshake. Too many women are afraid to strongly shake a person's hand, and a handshake sets the tone. If you want to be considered a player in the room, you have to let them know up front that they are dealing with a knowledgeable and powerful person." And she warned me about men who tried to practically break a woman's hand with their handshake. I'm sure the women in the room have noticed that from time to time. And she said, "You can't even wince at that. Don't let them know it hurts." We practiced my handshake for an entire summer. Every time I would see her, I had to shake her hand at least 5 times. Okay. After I graduated and I wasn't a summer fellow, I would visit her quite frequently because we had become very close, and every time she made me practice my handshake, it was like a test. So one day we were driving back from some event and she told me that a certain male politician had given her what she called the limp fish handshake. So she said she tightened her grip and actually caused him to wince, but just a little. Because remember, she was a gentlewoman. Years later, I remembered that as I met a newly elected district attorney in Philadelphia who gave me the limp fish. Like Judge Blatt, I tightened my grip, perhaps a little too much since he winced too. Some of the other lessons that I learned from Judge Blatt about how to quietly move through what, again, was basically a man's world, even when I graduated from law school, were to always look people in the eye, speak up confidently, make sure that you never, absolutely never, Joanne, end a sentence with your voice going up, because it's a sign of weakness and uncertainty. Always walk into a conference room and make sure you take a seat facing away from the window. Why? Because this way, the men can't avoid looking at you even when they are trying to look disinterested by staring out the window. It really worked. And never Never let a man interrupt you. Don't raise your voice. Stop, give him the glare, and then say something like, I have not finished my point, so you will have to wait. Didn't your mother teach you manners? It actually works. Well, at least most of the time. I think that Kamala Harris used it with that kind of technique in the debate. My friend Genevieve Blatt died on July 4th, 1996. I felt that July 4th was a fitting day for her to pass. After all, she lived her 83 years in total service to the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and the country, all while quietly resisting the established view of women in politics. She was, in every sense of the word, a trailblazer and a pioneer, and also an extremely gentle lady who sometimes, and I think rightly, is called the true First Lady of Pennsylvania politics. Neither of these women set out to be a pioneer or a trailblazer. Judge Blatt just wanted to work in government, but she thought maybe a law degree would be good. Lena Richert liked to cook. Why not make a living at it if she was given chances to learn? They simply wanted to be themselves and do what they thought was their calling. If that meant intruding into a male-dominated world, then so be it. They both did it their way, no fanfare, no bullhorn. And surprisingly to many people of their time, they were accepted and admired immediately for their work. It was kind of unusual. They stood out, but they didn't stand out. Their perseverance, resoluteness, and courage served them well. And while all kinds of nonviolent resistance and protest are acceptable, these women both seem to prefer the low-key, quiet method of advancing their plans, something that worked for them in their time, and often for me, since I learned it from Judge Blatt, but I called it quiet resistance. We'll now have Matters of the Heart with Tony Black.
Well, sort of with Tony Black, but mostly with you all. This is the time, I don't know if we have visitors here today, when we take time in our service to share with one another the things that lie on our heart, the matters that give us joy, the matters that cause us sorrow, the deeper things that we hold. And I hope that hearing about quiet resistance hasn't made you want to be quiet, because I want you to come to the microphone here, remind us who you are, and share with us that which is on your mind and in your heart that you think we could encourage you. Important word from today's message, encourage, to give heart to. We can encourage, we can share a joy. Please come up. Well, thank you all for sharing. It's part of how we become a oneness. We join together by sharing of our lives. I have these words from Bruce Marshall. Our lives are made up of small moments, sharing a meal with friends or family, wondering about a question that puzzles us, giving help to another, listening to a person and being listened to, talking with another about something that makes us sad, an embrace, a smile, a touch, offering a thought that might help just a little to make more sense of it all. Our gathering here is just such a moment. It's a small thing we do in gathering and sharing, yet it's very significant. May we affirm and celebrate the moments that we share here together. Blessed be.
We will bring this time of sharing to a close, as we often do, by singing Spirit of Life. Today it will be performed by our very own Christine Perry, and the words will be here on the screen.
Spirit of life, come unto me, sing in my heart all the stirrings of compassion, blow in the wind, rise in the sea.
There's a thousand can't be doners for the one who says it can, but the whole amount of deeds that count is done by the latter clan. For the can't be doners grumble and hamper, oppose, and doubt, but the daring person who says it can proceeds to work it out. There isn't a new invention beneath the shining sun that was ever wrought by the deed or thought of the tribe of can't be done. For the can't be doners mutter, while the can be's cool sublime, make their notions work till the others smirk. Oh, we knew it all the time. Oh, the can be's clan is meager, its membership is small, and it's mighty few who see their dreams come true or hear fame's trumpet call. But it's better to be a can be and labor and dream and die than one who runs with the can't be done's who haven't the pluck to try.
So in closing today, the two women whose lives we looked at briefly were definitely not part of those can't be done-ers. And a lot of people here are not part of those can't be done-ers. And I think that's great. So maybe the can't be done-ers will increase in size as we move along. These women that we spoke about figured out what they wanted to do, and they worked to do it. Did they have some luck? Yes. Did they fail at times? Yes. But they persevered. They didn't stomp their feet and disappear like a, you know, two-year-old. They each persisted in their own way. And so that's why, to me, they're examples of quiet resistance against societal norms. Each had a gift that they wanted to use. And as Judge Black often told me, you never know what will happen if you don't disturb it. And no matter how small, your actions do have a measurable impact on you. And eventually it will cause some level of change outside of you as well. Thank you for sharing today's service with me. Karen will now extinguish the chalice and read a writing by Reverend Audette Fulbright Folsom. I missed something. Oh, no, I didn't. No, it comes after now.
We are not done. Do not think we are finished. Oh no, we will never be finished. Never, just done, until the light of justice is lit behind every eye. We have come to take back the world that is the inheritance of better children, better lovers, better days. We extinguish the chalice, but not the light of independence, freedom, and justice. We will carry with us into the world.
Our closing song today is I Know I Can.
Oh, dear.